This is the Bartholomew Town Podcast.
For up-to-the-moment Rhode Island news, follow at Bill Bartholomew on X. Rhode Island Media Group, home of the Independent, Southern Rhode Island Newspapers, the Westerly Sun, and the Call-In Times, has local news coverage that you can't find anywhere else. Get in-depth local sports, events, and news coverage straight from the sources you trust. If it's hyper-local news you're looking for, call 401-789-9744 and press 1 to subscribe to the print or digital versions of your local news providers at Rhode Island Media Group. Lieutenant Governor Montos, good to see you. It's been a little bit.
Hi, Bill. Good morning. It's so good to see you. Thank you for this opportunity.
Absolutely. All right. Well, I really wanted to talk about your work as Lieutenant Governor. And honestly, I think highlight some of the programmatic elements of Lieutenant Governor's Day, so to speak.
Yes.
But I think we'd be remiss to not touch on the fact that a Boston Globe column by Dan McGowan came out today. Sabina Matos wants to win back Rhode Island's trust. I mean, let's just get right into it. The signature scandal.
Yeah.
It's obviously in the rear view, and I'm not sure how many people in Rhode Island are thinking about this with any sort of regularity, but sort of your executive summary, having run for Congress last year and having this situation pop up, do you feel like you've moved beyond this, at least psychologically, you've gotten past this moment?
Well, I have to say we're still in the middle of the investigation. I'm still waiting for the Attorney General and the State Police to let us know if the investigation has concluded, yes or no. I can tell you that more than anybody, I want to see this investigation being brought to its fullest. If it's anything else is still pending, I would love to see that anyone who violated the trust of the people of the state of Rhode Island, of our free and fair election, is brought to justice in to make sure that we can reassure the voters of the state of Rhode Island that our election process is a free and fair, and they can trust our election process.
I think we should have signatures on clipboards and 39 pieces of paper walking around in the wind, people hanging around at every miscellaneous fair or festival trying to get signatures? Or is that process something we could move beyond and find a better way to create a nomination scenario?
So, I'm supportive of the Secretary of State, Amorett. He has been proposing some legislations to clarify the signature gathering process, especially just to make sure that the local board canvassers know what to do whenever they're faced with a challenge or they suspect that there are bad signatures that are being presented to them. We also need to have to make sure that the Board of Election has a clear process for handling a situation like this. What happened to me last year, I don't want to see any other candidate going through this. There should be a clear process for the local board of canvassers to report any irregularities, but it should be a clear process also for the Board of Election to address any challenges or irregularities that are presented to them.
It's a cottage industry of sorts. You know, the idea, I mean, it's a huge part of our political infrastructure is signature gathering, really just all aspects of election. There's businesses that run around it. Is that something you think should go away? I mean, if you're a candidate that has very little funds or connections within political power, you're more likely to be out there on your own standing around, whereas if you have the means, you're able to hire out and contract out, and they can subcontract out into a variety of different people or entities or firms or whatever, whether it's election oriented, signature oriented. Should we get rid of that whole system, that industry that comes from the election?
Different states have different way to how they handle the signatures. They have different numbers of signature requirements. there are states in California that their requirements are different and they have an option for collecting the signature or paying a penalty. I will leave that to the Secretary of State Amore to come up with the best proposal for us to address this. What I know is that I believe that the signature gathering process is one of the most of sight of democracy. Because honestly, when you go out collecting signatures, anyone can sign your nominations paper. You're basically saying, yes, I want this. I believe that this person should have the right to appear on the ballot. And there's not a limit about whose signatures, whose papers you sign. One voter is able to sign all of the nominations paper for anyone that is running. So I think it's just a sign of democracy, and we have to protect our democratic process.
All right, we'll leave that there. Dan McGowan's column in the Boston Globe goes into this in more detail, including sort of some political prognostication of sorts for 2026. We'll see how that plays out. We've got a long way to go. We have a presidential election to get through before we can really start to turn our attention there. Let's talk about the Lieutenant Governor's office. It's so entrepreneurial. Mm-hmm. And if you take a look at the history of Rhode Island Lieutenant Governors in the modern era, they've all handled the office very differently. That's for sure. And
that is correct.
You're the first person. I mean, it's not constitutional, it's not statutory, but you basically ran as a running mate with Dan McKee. And, you know, I wonder if, you know, as you look at that, you know, now you've sort of established yourself in this office. What's a day in the life for the Lieutenant Governor, and how have you really started to define what your version of a Lieutenant Governor is?
Yeah, now thank you for that question. Honestly, I always remember as a little girl, my dad always used to ask me and my sister, where are you going to be when you grow up, right? And my sister always could say she's going to be a lawyer, a teacher. I always said that I wanted to do everything, right? The Office of Lieutenant Governor, I think, is the perfect place for me to be able to do everything, to have part on every type of, every aspect of the things that are affecting the quality of life of the people of the state of Rhode Island. As you said earlier, every Lieutenant Governor has brought some initiative on some areas in which they feel they're passionate about. We look at Lieutenant Governor Bob Wagon, right? He brought in the Student Award, so the Lieutenant Governor Leadership Award, which we just had this week. And that is a way to celebrate education and shows his connection and his support with the education. When we look at Governor Charlie Fogarty, his priorities was a lot around our veterans and our military families, and that is part of the work that the office does right now. We continue to do that work with the military families, work with the Gold Star families, making sure that we honor our fallen heroes through the Garden of Heroes. When you look at Lieutenant Governor Leach, started the Long-Term Care Coordinated Council, right? And that work continues to be part of the work that the office does right now. We have also the Lieutenant Governor in the past, like Elizabeth Roberts, who was the first woman Lieutenant Governor. She did a lot of work when it comes to the health care, a lot of work that created and established Health Source Arai. So every Lieutenant Governor has an opportunity to influence the office. All of those areas are part of the work that the office does right now. Governor McKee was prioritized a lot small businesses, and small business is part of the work that the office continued to do right now. I remember early on when I was when I became Lieutenant Governor, I remember being asked by everyone, the reporters, where are going to be your areas of work. Housing has always been part of the work that I've been involved since I was in the Providence City Council, even before I was elected to office. So housing has always been one of the areas in which I had been concentrated on. right now we are at a really good place because the housing is a priority for the leadership of the state of Rhode Island in general. The speaker is championing the reforms that we need to make sure that we're able to build more housing, affordable housing, but just building housing at all income levels. I'm very glad to see Speaker Shakashi leading that work. He has the support also of the Senate President and the support of the governor. This is a good time for the state of Rhode Island. I remember the days in which we were talking about housing and working with the different community development organizations, and it felt like we were talking and no one was listening, right? Right now we're at a different stage in the state of Rhode Island, so I'm happy to see that. Mm-hmm. But the work continues. There are other areas in which I'm working to continue to have an impact for the people of the state of Rhode Island and how we prepare for the future and to make sure that our state continues to be strong and that the Office of Lieutenant Governor continue to support the people of the state of Rhode Island.
Mm. I think you laid out some really broad and important issues there on housing. I think, look, I mean, we know we're in a housing crisis right now. And you're right that there's been significant steps. I think the Shakarchi package last year, and well, I refer to it colloquially as the Shakarchi package. So Shakarchi package, what a term to say three times fast. But there still certainly are a lot of issues when it comes to housing. Do you think your office can serve as a little bit of an ambassador on this issue? Or maybe you already are, where you're in the community trying to figure out how to connect the dots with different municipalities. I mean, some of the municipalities in the state don't seem to want to participate in advancing the cause of housing. I'll call out Narragansett for one. But we even see problematic issues in Providence right now. Is that something your office can sort of be the connector on in terms of, you know, not necessarily in a formal capacity, but an advocacy capacity at minimum?
Yeah, that's what I have been doing in going to different communities and just helping them understand. Sometimes people hear the term affordable housing and they have a negative connotation that goes with it. And what I have been doing is going to different communities and just making the connection to the need that they have right now in their communities. When you talk to anyone and you ask them, would you like to see more teachers living in your community? Would you like to see more healthcare workers who we have been celebrating and calling them heroes, especially after the pandemics? Do you want them to have the opportunity to live in your community? Do you want to see more firefighters, more police officers living in your community? And the answer is always yes. But they don't realize that right now, those professionals, those workers are not able to afford to buy or rent a housing in their communities because it's just out of reach. So just trying to make the connection and let them know that there are people in their communities right now that cannot afford to live there, that may be forced to move out, that there are seniors that would like to age in place and they're not able to afford. Sometimes they live in a house that they're not able to care for themselves anymore, but they don't have another options for them to downsize and to be able to stay in their communities. So that's the type of conversation that I'm having when I move from municipalities to municipalities, trying to make the connections to what the housing needs means to them and how they can be part of the solution.
There's no question science on Alzheimer's has advanced pretty significantly in recent times. I mean, I heard a story the other day about really just moving towards a cure is something that we may see in our lifetime. Within your office, that's something that you're a big champion on. Talk about that, your work there, because I think that could be a standalone story in and of itself and ought to be. What exactly do you do as Lieutenant Governor to advocate and move towards a cure for Alzheimer's?
Yes, thank you. So the state of Rhode Island early this year, we put out our plan for the next 5 years, how we're going to address support those individuals suffering from Alzheimer's and any other dementia-related disease, and also how we're going to support their family members and their caregivers. This is a plan that we're using as a frame for how we're going to address this challenge on the next 5 years. Right now, we're going through the process of developing our work plan for implementing that plan. And I invite anyone that would like to be part of this conversation to reach out to my office, because we want to hear from you. We want to hear your feedback. We have to think about this. The state of Rhode Island for the 2030, we're going to have 25% of our population is going to be over the age of 60. And we have been seeing more and more lately, the Alzheimer's diagnostic is happening even at an early age. We have to make sure that the state of Rhode Island, we are have communities that are supportive to the needs of the individuals suffering from Alzheimer's and any other related disease, and that we have we provide the support to the family members and the caregivers.
Mm. It's absolutely critical, and we're learning more and more that Alzheimer's is something that there may be early onset in as early as your 30s or 40s in some cases, and yes. You don't know that you have this disease until it's really fully engulfed your mind, and it's a yes. tragic disease. Do you work on a national level trying to advocate for research dollars in terms of any efforts towards a cure, or is it more about preparing the state of Rhode Island infrastructurally to support those who have Alzheimer's?
Yeah, most of the work is locally here, working with the Department of Health, working with the Alzheimer's Association, Donna McGowan, who does an amazing work in creating awareness within the state of Rhode Island, into fundraising to make sure that we have resources to find a cure. Working with other groups within the state of Rhode Island that had advocated for the Alzheimer's, for the patients, but also for the caregivers. At the national level, through the Lieutenant Governors, the National Association of Lieutenant Governors, we always work in collaboration with the Alzheimer's Association nationally also. It's part of the work that we do.
You've been on record over the years as a supporter of Israel. When we take a look at this yes. current moment right now, we could go into all kinds of details and all kinds of tributaries. We could go back through history, current history of really an almost ancient level, and take a look at the political landscape and assess that from all different perspectives. We may disagree, we may agree, I'm not sure, and that's really besides the point. Right now, in this moment right yeah. here, as you look at an invasion in Rafah and a continuation of the humanitarian suffering that's taking place in Gaza as a whole, and of course, always the preamble, not losing sight of the fact that there was an attack on October 7th and that there are hostages.
Yeah,
you've been on record as a supporter of Israel. Right now, yes. your message, if Benjamin Netanyahu, if anyone of a spokesperson nature from the IDF were here right now, if President Biden were here right now, what would you tell them about what you're seeing just as a person here in Rhode Island, or even as a person who's a high elected officer?
What something that we cannot forget is that what was happening here in Rhode Island and nationwide before October 7th, we saw an increase on the numbers of hate speech and hate actions against our Jewish community. I can tell you, myself, the governor, and we were part of several incidents in which we attended events in response to hateful speech and hateful actions that happened towards our Jewish community. Then comes October 7th. And what happened, honestly, I remember having conversation with members of the Jewish communities before that they were always concerned about something like that happening. And many of us didn't imagined that that could be possible, right? I remember speaking with individuals that told me, I'm concerned because I have, I can remember this specific person that told me, my daughter lives in the line with Gaza. My grandkids are there. I want to make sure that they're protected. And at that time, we could never imagine that something like it took place on October 7th was going to happen. And I have to say, it's basically they were giving us the warning signs were there that something was going to happen. Right now, what is happening in Gaza is horrible. But I believe that we cannot forget that Hamas started all this carnage on October 7th. And whenever we are talking about all everything that's happening right now, we cannot forget everything that happened on October 7th. We cannot forget that there are hostages still that Hamas is holding. So as hard and heartbreaking things are right now, we cannot forget that the number of hate speech in actions against our Jewish community has been increasing month after month and year after year. And we have to make sure that we stand strongly and say that we're not, hate is not okay, regardless of who is the target of hate. We cannot be okay allowing for hateful actions to take place without speaking up in talking about how it is affecting communities and what it creates in our society once we normalize hate and hateful speech.
Yeah, I don't think anybody would disagree that, well, some people may, but anti-Semitism is a vile and just disgusting piece of some of the hatred that we see in a number of different ways, even in our own country, even in our own state. This happens for sure. Separating that issue from the geopolitical scenario right now, do you think there should be a ceasefire in Gaza and that this should be reviewed? Again, not getting into specific actions, that's not why we're here today, but in terms of, I've expressed my views, other people have expressed their views, but just on a very basic level, should there be a ceasefire in Gaza right now?
There should be an agreement, ceasefires in which those hostages are returned and humanitarian aid is brought to the people of Gaza, the innocent people of Gaza that are being held hostage by Hamas right now and used as human shields for their hateful act. So ideally, yes, I want to see a ceasefire as soon as possible, but also want to see that we ensure that the return of the hostages and that it is a way to provide relief and assistance to the people of Gaza.
Last question here. Let's use the hypothetical that Governor McKee, I think I asked, last time I asked this question was, I think I framed it, let's say he gets asked to be on the senior PGA tour and go play professional golf. And he says, you know what? I've had enough of the bridge. I've had enough of answering questions from local media and doing all that work. And I'm going to go play golf full time. Let's say he's got an opportunity, President Biden calls and says he wants to make him ambassador to Turkey. He takes it. You ready to become governor today?
Yes, I'm ready.
You think you'll run for governor in 2026? And if we've got Narona, Shikarchi, Folks, Munoz, maybe Kayla swoops in, you want to be a part of that crowd?
I can tell you what I want to do is serve the people of the state of Rhode Island in the role that I'm elected to do it. I'm the lieutenant governor, and I'm going to continue to serve the people of the state of Rhode Island, the role of lieutenant governor. Part of the work of the lieutenant governor, of the mandates of the office, is to make sure that we ensure the continuity of government within the state of Rhode Island if the governor decides to become a professional golfer.
That should be statutorily written right there. Lieutenant Governor, thanks so much for your time today.
My pleasure. Thank you, Bill.
As Rhode Island's first ever member-owned credit union, Navigant Credit Union has been a staple in the local business community for more than 108 years. Today, Navigant is a $3.4 billion institution serving more than 136,000 members across 25 physical branch locations. But since its founding in 1915, the mission has never changed. Navigant Credit Union's team of financial professionals have remained committed to improving the financial well-being of the families, businesses, and communities they serve across Rhode Island. Learn more at NavigantCU.org.